You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
Good morning. Welcome to Matinair on Air. Jane Matinair, Greg Bach, and Calvin Butenoff coming to you live from our studio at Radio Park in Racine. You can always join us. Call or text. The number is the same, 855-752-4842. You can also leave a comment if you're watching on the live stream. We live stream on Facebook, YouTube, and what used to be Twitter. We got some baseball action coming up later on today. Our broadcast starts at 5:35. The Brewers at the Mets tonight. You can listen on terrestrial radio on WRCE in Richland Center, WISS in Oshkosh, WRJN here in Racine and Kenosha, WCQM in Park Falls, and our newest Milwaukee Brewers affiliate, WBZH, in Hayward. The Mets hosting the Crew. Our broadcast starts at 5:35. Delighted to be joined by our next guest. He is the president for Wisconsin for Environmental Justice. Dean Mahler is here. Good morning, Dean. Thank you so much for joining us. How are you?
Well, thank you so much for having me. Great to be here.
Glad to have you here. You sent me an email after you heard our discussion with PJ Leash. We were talking about ticks and the growing tick problem here in Wisconsin, and this is tied into climate change. And the warmer conditions are allowing bugs that would not normally thrive here to do really well as the climate continues to warm. So we wanted to talk about a number of different things related to the climate. Let's talk about the extreme weather that we've been seeing, Dean. The fires, the flooding, this is the new normal, I guess.
Right. I guess the operative word is more. We're going to have more of these types of events, more warming conditions. 2024 was the warmest ever, and of course 2025 is on track to be even warmer than that. Go back to February of last year, we had the first tornado ever occurring in that month. Other economic things that are happening, homeowners insurance, double-digit increases in that. And of course, we have to remember that things that happen in Florida or California or wherever in the world, it affects our insurance rates here. And of course, that's certainly some of the things that we're looking at here. I personally like snow, and we just certainly haven't had enough of that. That's for sure. So, the ice, Lake Michigan, certainly far from, actually the lowest ever from what I've been told in terms of ice cover on Lake Michigan, which is, that's where we get our refrigerator effect, right?
Yeah.
When we live next to the lake. So, yeah. It's all adding up, that's for sure. And it's we can see, feel, and touch it. There's no question about that.
Mm-hmm. And there's definitely, there's an environmental discussion to have, but there's also an economic discussion. Two winters ago, it was so bad up north with the lack of snow and ice that Senator Baldwin and Governor Evers had to put together, I think it was $50 million in packages of aid to businesses that were affected by the lack of winter that we got. So it's also, when we want to spin that conversation, we also have to talk about the economic impact it has on businesses and people here in the state.
Right, exactly. And I appreciate the opportunity to discuss it in this manner in more of a complete fashion because, we watch the local weather. And of course, I realize the weather people are maybe a little bit limited in terms of what they can tell us, but they can talk about this extreme conditions. But on the regular news, they talk about the fact that it is caused by climate change, well then, the rest of the conversation is what causes climate change. And of course, that's the conversation that we're certainly trying to promote as an organization so people have a greater awareness of, connecting the dots, if you will, that ultimately it leads to the amount of CO2 we're putting in the environment, and that's caused by our burning of fossil fuel. That's the message we want to get out there and repeat it over and over and over again so people understand that and start to take some action.
You know what, Dean, though, and I've run into this within my own family, trying to talk to some family members about climate change, and one of my in-laws essentially said, I've been talking about this with my buddy, and he doesn't think it's real, so I kind of agree with him. What do I come back with then to that?
I think the thing that I have come upon is that I believe the scientists, and the particular scientists that I really believe in, are the fossil fuel scientists that made this determination back in the 70s. By name, James Black, Harry Shaw, Ed Garvey were people that headed up the department at Exxon that was their scientific department, and their mission was to look at the impact of their product on the environment. And they came back with an answer, and the answer is what we're seeing today. And they were astonishingly accurate in terms of the modeling they did because of that work. And of course, you know, the industry was kind of at a crossroads then. I mean, they had developed even a solar department. So they were thinking about, you know, big ideas, et cetera, in terms of the next direction for their company. But in the end, they packed it all in.
Yep.
It just said, no, this is really bad for business. I mean, if you're talking about businesses that have my background is a lot of it's in business and investing and so forth. So if you can create a business model where you have repeat business, you know, like cigarettes, like, you know, you need for fossil fuel. Well, I mean, you know, I mean, it's logical that you want to go with that path because you get a lot of repeat business.
Right.
That's the model and the road they went down. And the process they went through then is basically to discredit or deny that those types of things were happening. And of course, that's the ultimate thing that we're working towards, is to have accountability from the fossil fuel industry. Now, let's look at this maybe almost in a humorous fashion. We could ask them to pay for the remediation. And of course, I think the last time we spoke, I talked about the $16 billion study that we commissioned that was released last year, which was just remediation for the state of Wisconsin. We can talk about that in more detail. And of course, you know, it would be nice if we asked them and they said, yeah, we'll pay our fair share.
Oh, yeah.
It just shouldn't be all on the taxpayers. But I think the only way we're going to get, you know, an answer out of them is in a court of law. That's the sad reality. So that's the mission, or the, we have to ask in a state, in a court of law, to have any type of result with this. So.
We have a comment on the live stream who says CO2 was proven to increase heat in the 1800s. This is long proven and established science.
And to go with what you're saying, Jane, when someone says that notion of, well, I heard it on a podcast or my friend said this, I said, okay, great. What are their qualifications for saying what they said? Because what I personally feel like is whenever you try to encroach on someone's convenience, that's when they'll go the other way, when they say, oh, well, fossil fuels do this, but I like my car. And I listened to a podcast where they said cars are great. I feel like if you have to challenge people's convenience to get them to stand up and say, yeah, you're right.
And of course, you know, we're not trying to bite the hand that feeds us. I mean, because obviously fossil fuel and the access to fossil fuel has given us a wonderful lifestyle. There's no question about that. But it's time to go in a newer, different direction. And when in this country have we ever stood in the way of new technology?
Yeah.
We've always embraced it, encouraged it, and we've even subsidized it. And of course, I noticed in the previous segment you were talking about the budgets and so forth. Well, we currently, I think it's $750 billion is a subsidy that the fossil fuel industry enjoys. So, I mean, they could back off on that and help the balance budgets and so forth, but they haven't. They have a lot of lobbyists that make sure that stays in place. So it's. Yeah, a new direction in you know, we don't make buggy whips anymore. And why? Because we don't have horses for transportation anymore.
Because things change, yes.
Things change, exactly. I mean, you know, we didn't have, you know, we didn't go back to a time when if you're going to make a phone call out and about, you need to have quarters in your pocket looking for a phone booth. Well, that's, you know, those days are long gone. So, yeah.
If you're just joining us, Dean Muller is our guest. He's the president of Wisconsin for Environmental Justice, just talking about environmental concerns. It's all tied into all of our budgets, not just the state budget, but certainly the federal budget. You were talking, Dean, about, you know, these energy companies. They want, from what I have seen, at least some of them want to get into solar. They would like to get into other kinds of renewables, and yet they're not getting any kind of support from the Trump administration.
Yeah, this is true. This is certainly a sad fact. And of course, I'm just baffled. I don't know what to say. I do know what to say, I guess, from the standpoint that it is new technology, and we certainly don't want to stand in the way of that. I do know that, you know, certain industries, Wall Street is certainly embracing it as opportunities for investment as far as mitigation is concerned, as far as new technologies are concerned, whether solar, wind, or whatever it might be, geothermal, the list goes on and on of investment opportunities. And those things are still going on. I mean, industries are not backing away from their commitment to doing this, because there is money to be made.
Right.
There is opportunities to capitalize on. The insurance industry obviously has figured out risk very well, because that's what they're in the business of doing. And if they didn't do it, they'd be out of business. They wouldn't be able to show anything on the bottom line. So I think in the face of the pushback that is coming out of DC, which is certainly unfortunate, I think, you know, the trend still goes on to more green energy and more green opportunities. That's for sure.
Well, and to get back to the economics of it all, you know, we see a push from the administration to bring manufacturing back to America. And then in some instances they give, it's next to impossible to make the things they want to make here, but we could create manufacturing in this country, creating jobs in this sustainable energy field, places where they are manufacturing solar panels, places where they are more EVs available. Like, there are opportunities to create those industries, those jobs, and grow the economy.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree more. And I couldn't agree more. And when we, in our organization, you know, one of the things that we're emphasizing, we released the cost study, which was said that $16 billion would be the impact on the state of Wisconsin, which is really a low ball number. It was designed to raise awareness. And we recognize that 70% of that $16 billion will fall on city and county governments. Now, just think about that for a minute and the impact that that has. And of course, we all know that cities and county governments are struggling mightily to balance their budget.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And when you look at some of the numbers in relationship to the budgets of these individual counties and cities, irregardless of their size, it's a big impact. Sometimes it's one for one in terms of their city or county budgets, in terms of what the cost of remediation specifically to that particular county or city, because the cost study goes down to each individual county, city, village, whatever. And that's the point that we're at, is talking to elected officials and taxpayers in those jurisdictions to make that point that they need to take this action. They need to begin the litigation at that level. It's not, we're not talking about the next COPE conference,
right,
or what we can do. You know, this is litigation pure and simple. Is what we're pushing for.
We Absolutely. Are talking to Dean Muller. He's the president of Wisconsin for Environmental Justice. Dean, we're coming up against a break that we'll get to in just a little bit. We're going to talk about cities' infrastructure. I live in the city of Milwaukee. The roads have been a long, long standing issue in the city of Milwaukee. We're talking about hundreds of millions of dollars in order to make repairs on that. How is climate all tied in with our infrastructure? We'll continue this conversation on the other side. Stay with us. You are listening to Matt Nair on Air. This is the Civic Media Radio Network. We will be right back.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
Good morning. Welcome back to Matt Nair on Air. Jane Matt Nair, Greg Bach, Calvinator on the board, coming to you from our studio at Radio Park in Racine. You can join us. Call or text at 855-752-4842. Leave a comment if you're watching on the live stream on Facebook, YouTube, and what used to be Twitter. We are joined by Dean Muller, the president of Wisconsin for Environmental Justice. Dean, before we went to the break, talked a little bit just about the climate and the changing climate, and it has massive impacts on cities and towns, even little towns, their infrastructure. It affects the roads. It affects everything, doesn't it?
Absolutely. And you alluded to the streets of the city of Milwaukee, which are a little rough these days.
They are. Yes.
And there was, I think, a recent story that I came across. I think it's $821 million is what it would take to fix them all up.
Yep.
So three quarters of a $1 billion. Absolutely. So it would certainly cost a lot of money to repair those. And of course, we have a major project going on with the Three Rivers that in the harbor here in Milwaukee, which is a $500 million project, where they're going to take out all of the the remediation project would remove the PCBs that are in the Three Rivers, Menominee, KK, and the Milwaukee Rivers, contain it down near a deposit site down underneath the Home Bridge, And, you know, that's largely paid by taxpayers. And of course, the industries that, that use the those rivers as an open sewer are long gone.
Yeah.
And they're not going to pay for any of it. And, you know, and I can also make the point that the Wolf River was is a different story. That's, that was the paper industries. But in a court of law, they were made to pay. And that was a $1 billion cleanup project. So
that must have been a long time ago.
I know. And it's certainly an issue of fairness. There's no question about that. I think we share a common bond with elected officials as taxpayers. Our budgets are strapped, and so are theirs. So if we can come up with some alternate sources of revenue, like what we did during COVID, which was a big success for the country and the state of Wisconsin in terms of the money that was pumped into this state, and really helped to stimulate and get our economy back rolling again, actually ahead of many other countries around the world. And then we, you know, look at other sources of revenue during the opioid litigation, which was three-quarters of a $1 billion paid out over 15 years to deal with a problem that, you know, affects pretty much every community in the state. That's extra revenue. That's, you know, manna from heaven, right? We don't have to ask the taxpayers to pay for it. So, and ask the guilty party, in that case, the pharmaceutical companies, to pay for it.
Right.
So it's... And, you know, we're having these conversations with all sizes of cities and counties across the state. And, you know, and it's just a question of getting this message out there that they can file a litigation, a suit. It doesn't cost them anything to do it. They're going to be handled by attorneys on a contingency basis. And, you know, why not? Why not? I think it's a fiduciarily a responsible thing for them to do as elected officials, in my opinion.
Well, and it just must make your head explode when we were talking about the federal budget that they're kicking around. There was something dropped in there again where they're going to give subsidies to coal, but they are going to tax wind and solar, which is just like, yeah. What?
Sounds right, though. It sounds right. It's on brand.
It is on brand, isn't it?
Yeah, I know. I made a statement there I thought that made a lot of sense, but then, of course, I was once reminded by someone that, be careful, Dean, when you make too much sense.
But when we were talking about, when we're talking about renewables, Dean, if we do not invest in green energy, aren't we kind of ceding any kind of leadership role that we had to other countries to do this? Because just because we're not going to invest in it doesn't mean that other countries are going to invest in it.
Oh, yeah. It is a geopolitical issue. There's no question about that. China is certainly a leader in this. And actually, Europe is second, and we're trailing behind in third place. It's really the way it shakes out right now in terms of the progression towards this technology. And that does have major geopolitical implications for us. I don't think I need to spell those out, but I mean, you know, it is what it is. There's no question about that. I mean, and yeah, it is. It is a real challenge. And something that needs that we need to address and get moving on, and we need money to do that. We need money to do that. It's a costly area in terms of expenses. So
we need money, and we need partnership and compromise. We need leaders to finally say, like, look, we can't be beholden to these lobbyists and these companies for, you know, we have to make a decision and move forward just to, you know, save ourselves a little
bit.
And stay
competitive.
Yeah, but as long as they keep spinning the narrative that it isn't as bad as we think, and we can't live without fossil fuels, it's impossible to do without, then we're going to be sitting here having this conversation all the time.
Mm-hmm. You're exactly right. You're exactly right. I couldn't agree more. And I think that, you know, the moving the dial on this is going to be, you know, require some, you know, how do I want to say it? Some thought on a part of elected officials, again, at the local level, since they bear the heaviest burden as far right. as mitigation is concerned. And they have some real challenges and some real problems. And of course, I realize that sometimes, maybe, let's be honest, all the times, that futuristic long-term view is something that is difficult for us to, even as individuals or as forms of government, to take in terms of what it's going to look like 5 and 10 years out down the road. And this has been a slow moving train wreck, a slow, steady moving train wreck. And every day it gets a little a little more obvious in terms of what we're seeing.
Dean Muller is the president of Wisconsin for Environmental Justice. Thank you so very much, Dean.
Thank you, Dean.
For taking some time out for us. We will absolutely have you back on the show. We got news coming up next, and then when we return, audio sorbet. We're talking ice cream.
All right.
What's the worst? This is Matt Nair on Air on the Civic Media Radio Network. Good morning. Welcome back to Matt Nair on Air. Jane Matt Nair, Greg Bach, Dr. Slide on the board, coming to you from our studio at Radio Park in Racine. You can always join us. Call or text at 855-752-4842. Leave a comment if you're watching on the live stream on Facebook, YouTube, and what used to be Twitter. Coming up at the very end of the show, we wrap it up as we always do with This Shouldn't Be a Thing. Today it's the You Dirty Rat edition.
Even better this time.
Oh, thank you. I'm practicing.
Yeah.
Trying to make that a little bit better. Yep, that's coming up in just a little bit. Wanted to let you know, though, we are going out on the road. It's officially official.
We can officially talk about the official announcement to the official road trip.
Yes.
Of Jane and Todd.
Matt Nair on
Air.
And
Greg.
And Greg, Matt Nair on Air, and the Todd Halba Show hitting the road in just a couple of weeks. We will be broadcasting from Oshkosh, from Butternut.
Can't believe a dream come true.
So excited. And Hayward on July 16th, 17th, and 18th.
We're going to be packing in a lot those 3 days.
We are going to be doing a lot those 3 days.
We're going to have a lot of fun. I just have one question for you, though, Jane. As we all know, last year, Amory.
Yes.
Was your favorite place you had never been to.
Correct.
And then you went there with Todd.
Yeah.
You loved it.
Loved it.
This year, Butternut.
It's Butternut.
Has taken that mantle.
Yeah.
I guess the question is, you know, will you be immediately looking for a new favorite place you've never been to once Butternut is officially
on
the list?
Sure. Always looking.
I can't wait.
Maybe. Always looking.
Mm.
But that's one of the things we love about doing this show is learning about Wisconsin.
Absolutely. This show has made me so proud to be from Wisconsin.
Right? We have wonderful, wonderful things here.
Agreed.
So we're going to be doing EAA Air Venture. We'll have a little preview of that. We're going to talk upcoming Packers training camp.
Yep.
We're going to talk about the history of small towns in Wisconsin, specific to Butternut. And then Lumberjack, baby. Lumberjacks and powwows. That's going on as well around the Hayward area the week that we're up there.
Just found out that there's a tribal powwow
very
happening.
Cool.
And I'm very excited about that. So we'll be able to get someone from the powwow to be on the show to talk about it, because that's another aspect of this state that's wonderful, is that our wonderful indigenous tradition.
Absolutely.
And yeah, I'm very much looking forward to it. And I'm going to be eating probably really horribly, which is going to be tough. Well, you know, I've been eating better and better lately, trying to take care of myself. But I'm sure there will be something of salted nature, of cheese nature.
Oh, I think so.
Cheesecake nature.
Oh, sure.
So,
might be pizza involved as well. special road trip edition, Matt Nair on Air, and the Todd Halba program hitting the road in a couple of weeks on July 16th, 17th, and 18th. We will have more details for you as they become available. All right, right now it is time. This is a portion of the program we call Audio Sorbet, where we like to get away from the news and just take a breath to get reoriented and maybe have a couple laughs. Here is today's question.
Yes.
What is the worst ice cream? What is your least favorite ice cream? 855-752-4842. That's 855-75-CIVIC. The worst ice cream. That is our audio sorbet question for today. 855-752-4842. The worst ice cream. What would be your nominee? Dan from Wausau texted this in really early, listening on WAUK, sweet corn flavored ice cream.
Huh?
I had it last summer in Minocqua. It was unexpectedly awful.
Well, okay, so I feel like we need to throw down something really quick here, and that is, yes, sweet corn ice cream, probably terrible. I'm looking at the world's worst ice cream flavors, and we're getting a lot of those savory experimental. So like octopus, squid, ox tongue.
No.
We're talking about, do you just hate Rocky Road? Like that.
Exactly.
Let's keep it traditional. Don't be like,
a little more simple.
Lobster ice cream is
Ugh. Yeah, no. We have an unexpected phone call at 855-752-4842. Delighted she made time for us. State Senator Kelda Royce is on the line. Good morning, Senator. Thank you for joining us. How are things in Madison this morning?
Good morning. It's a wild ride in Madison as we finish up the work on the state budget in the Joint Finance Committee. And Republicans just voted down our Democratic motion and the last one of the budget cycle. So they're obviously committed to shortchanging our kids, our health care, our transit, and other critical things that matter.
So where does this leave us now?
Well, the governor and the Senate Democratic leader have negotiated with legislative Republicans to make their terrible budget slightly less bad. And so that is, you know, moving in the right direction. It looks like we are going to be on the floor this week. So even though we did miss the statutory deadline of June 30th to pass a new budget, it looks like we will have a state budget moving forward, albeit one that really just lets our state limp along for the next 2 years until hopefully Democrats are in the majority and can pass a budget that actually prioritizes our kids, public education, and the needs of folks all around the state.
We are joined on the phone by State Senator Kelda Royce, and we are talking about the state of the Wisconsin state budget. So, Senator Royce, at this point, we're not going back to just the last budget. There will be a new budget?
There will be a new budget, yes, and Republicans are continuing their mantra of tax cuts above everything else. You know, our schools will see a very slight increase in the reimbursement for special education, but nothing compared to what advocates and educators from around the state have said was needed.
Right.
The child care counts program that had kept thousands of child care providers in business, that program is ending, but there will be a small amount of money that's made available to help kind of cushion that loss over the next year. And some kind of transition funds to help hopefully, again, bridge until 2 years from now, when my hope is that I will be helping to write the state budget rather than just having to vote no on what the Republicans do.
So we were all excited when we came on the air this morning, Senator Royce, thinking, wow, look at this. We actually, both sides have kind of come together and agree on some things, and that really is not the case.
Well, you know, I mean, I think there is a value in reducing the harm of this budget, right? School districts having a little bit more money is better than having no money or
right.
A cut, right? Same for the universities of Wisconsin. Republicans were eager to do an $87 million cut at a time when we have a $4 billion surplus and a huge workforce shortage. Right now, it looks like we're going to have a very small increase to the universities, which is much needed after 15 years of flat or devastating cuts in their budgets. So, you know, it's not nothing. It's not nothing, but it definitely falls very short of what we heard from Wisconsinites at all of our public hearings that they really wanted to see in the budget.
Senator, one of the things we had Pat Kreitlow on the show earlier, he talked about the child care aspect of this and that it's only funding for 1 year. And I want to make sure I heard that correctly. If it's only 1 year, what happens after what happens when we go into year two of the budget? Is it just cut or do you have to go back to the table for more negotiations?
Well, I would anticipate just given the horrific cuts that are likely to come out of the federal budget process that what the Republicans are doing in Washington, that we are going to have to do a budget repair bill. And so I'm sure this will be an ongoing topic. But there are also some, you know, the Republicans want to deregulate childcare. They want to raise the ratios. They want to, you know, use child labor to solve the childcare crisis.
Right, yeah.
They
right.
have a bunch of policy items that I think they want to use to kind of hold it over our heads to try to extract these policy changes that they know the governor would otherwise veto.
State Senator Kelda Royce is joining us on the phone. We are talking about the status of the Wisconsin state budget and talking about what's going to happen, what's going to get cut. We were talking about the investment in children and especially special education. And I think it's important, Senator Royce, that people understand we fund private schools 90% for their special ed children.
Absolutely right.
Right? 90%.
Right. And those schools can discriminate against you, right?
Right.
They can say, we don't want this kid, and kick them out. And public schools, of course, can't do that.
Right.
Our schools are obligated to teach every child, and that's as it should be, because every child deserves the chance to learn and the opportunity to thrive.
I guess I'm curious, Senator Roy, is what their justification is for funding it so completely for private schools and yet not doing the same for public schools.
Well, the justification that some have been very open about on the right is that they don't believe in public schools and they don't think public schools should exist. They would like to completely privatize education. And they view this as an important way to weaken public education and shovel money into these unaccountable voucher schemes that do not answer to taxpayers. And they are exempt from so many of the safety measures and protections that govern public schools.
And that's something else I have never understood. I don't understand why private institutions do not have some kind of body to which they have to report. That I find that mind-blowing.
Well, it's like if you want public funds, you should have to follow the rules.
Right.
To me, that seems like a bare minimum safeguard that you'd want to have. And Republicans are constantly talking about how important fiscal responsibility is. But when it comes to making decisions, they're the most irresponsible bunch out there. I mean, they're willing to just basically write blank checks to these unaccountable voucher schools. And, we've seen some terrible abuses from some of these. We've seen corruption. We've seen fly-by-night operations shutting down and, taking all the students' data so that if you graduated from one of these places, you can't even get a diploma. So there's all kinds of risks that this poses to kids that frankly deserve much better.
At a point you made before about the discrimination of students, as far as those schools go, I just want to make a point too for the listeners that they can discriminate against those students, but also then keep the money they have gotten. They can accept the kid, take the money and say, well, you don't fall into this point of our handbook, so we can get rid of you and we get to keep your money. And that is just period. And
that's right.
Oh, go ahead.
They keep the kid for a few weeks and then they kick him out, but they keep the money for the rest of the period.
Yeah. And that is tax funded
money.
So it's not like,
right.
I feel like a lot of people don't always get their brains around voucher money. It is a stream of money that is funded by us, the taxpayers. It is two school systems that we pay for, essentially, and the ones that private have no standards.
Yeah, it sure seems like we're a whole lot better to our private schools than we are to our public schools.
There's no question. And keep in mind that money is coming out of your local school district's budget.
Yeah.
So your kid's school is losing money because the school district has to write a check. This was sold as a program to help low-income students. But the reality is that it has turned out that the vast majority of the money that's going around the state to these voucher schemes are to kids who have never set foot in a public school.
Yep. They're already private school attendees.
Subsidizing wealthy families.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Thank you so much for making time for us. State Senator Kelda Royce has joined us on the phone. Really appreciate it, Senator. I know you're busy and I know you got to go. Thank you very, very much.
Thanks for your time. Good to see you.
Stay with us. We're going to wrap things up with This Shouldn't Be a Thing on the other side. You are listening to Matt Nair on Air on the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
Welcome back to Matt Nair on Air. Jane Matt Nair, Greg Bach, Dr. Slide on the board, coming to you from our studio at Radio Park in Racine. Join us, call or text at 855-752-4842. Leave a comment if you're watching on the live stream on Facebook, YouTube, and what used to be Twitter. We got baseball coming up later on today, 5:35. Our broadcast starts as the Brewers head out east, and they are hosted by the Mets. Catch the game on terrestrial radio on WRCE in Richland Center, WISS in Oshkosh, WRJN here in Racine and Kenosha, WCQM in Park Falls, and WBZH in Hayward. The Brewers at the Mets tonight. Our broadcast starts at 5:35. Our thanks to Senator Kelda Royce, who joined us, carved out a little time for us. She's busy in Madison. There's a lot of things going on with that. So she kind of jumped into our audio sorbet. We're really grateful that she did. But we will do today's audio sorbet tomorrow because we did get some responses.
We did.
The question was, what's the worst ice cream?
Yeah. What is the worst ice cream?
What is the worst?
We did also get a great recommendation for our trip from Sarah in Green Bay. Oh, she good. Said, if you're going to Hayward for a powwow, have some fry bread and or an Indian taco.
Oh, I've heard of fried bread.
That will be on the list.
That sounds really yummy. Mm-hmm. Yes, we are going on the road in a couple of weeks along with the Todd Alba Show, July 16th, 17th, and 18th. I had to think for a second.
Yes.
And we will have more details. Hopefully, we're going to be at Oshkosh, we're going to be in Butternut, and we're going to be in Hayward.
Yeah.
So if you are in or around those communities, hopefully you'll be able to come out and say hi.
Send us recommendations on restaurants and coffee
good
shops
foods.
And like little museums, whatever. We want to, when we're not on the air, we want to check out the wares.
Yeah, absolutely. So send us hints.
Yes.
We would love to know. You can always contact us at janesays@civicmedia.us, JaneSays, janesays@civicmedia.us. Getting late, just about 10:55, Calvin. That means it is time for...
This Shouldn't Be a Thing.
Oh, and this is quite something. This is from Vice. Ashley Fike with the byline. The headline reads... Meet the rat-obsessed tour guide leading visitors through New York City's rodent hotspots.
Gross.
Susan Reisman, the self-proclaimed rat whisperer, leads a tour in Manhattan called Garbage and Rats for $40 a ticket. $40 a ticket.
All right.
People follow her through the underbelly of New York City, learning about rodent sex habits up to 20 times a day, rat history, and how dog poop functions as an urban snack bar for rats. She wears fuzzy rat ears on her head and treats the two-hour tour like a cross between a field trip and an urban wildlife safari.
I'm sorry. Did you just say 2 hours?
2 hours for $40.
I don't want this hate so much. Disgusting. No, thank you.
It's working for her.
Yeah, apparently, because no total judgment. I hate this.
Suzanne says that guests are introduced to the Norway rat. They're actually from Asia. They showed up on some ships in the 1700s and never left. They took a look around and thought, jackpot, baby, we're staying. At one stop, a dachshund-sized rat ran out of the bushes. People reacted like bird watchers spotting a rare hawk.
So are they ratters?
They're ratters. She is actually a graduate of New York City's Rat Academy.
No!
I'm just reading the article. And a member of the Rat Pack, a group of anti-rat activists trained by the New York City Sanitation Department.
Wait. She's a part of an anti-rat. Okay. All right. She's part of an anti-rat group.
No.
But she makes her money off of showing people rats.
Essentially.
This is hypocrisy of the highest order, Jane. And I will not stand for it. I want my $40, which I have not spent on this, back. And somehow give me 2 hours of my life also, because this is the height of ridiculous.
Susan Reisman, who heads the Garbage and Rats walking tour in Manhattan, says her tours regularly sell out. Some people are just curious. Others are nostalgic for a grittier version of New York. When I lived in New York, we saw live rats all the time. We saw a pancake rat. It was a very New York experience.
You want a New York experience? Give me $40 and I'll rob you in Times Square. You want that? I'll do that for you. It's easy.
Reisman says she hopes the city's garbage problem will get better. That will help with the rat population. If we cut down access to their food, that would help significantly. The city never sleeps, and neither do its rats.
I am very upset we talked about this today.
That wraps up today's edition of...
This Shouldn't Be a Thing.
You can always send yours in to janesays@civicmedia.us. Us.
So disgusting.
Coming up tomorrow, the first Wednesday of July. So our friend Darren Von Ruden is going to be here. He is a farmer here in Wisconsin. Also, Friday is the 4th of July. We're going to be running a specially curated show. So Dan Schaefer will join us tomorrow to do some recombobulating instead of this coming Friday.
I'm sure we'll be talking about the budget and Bucks news. It's been coming through all morning.
Absolutely. Thank you, Greg and Calvin and all of our engineers, because without you, nothing works. And thank you, most of all, for calling and for texting and for listening. It really does mean the world. I hope you find some joy today and you get the chance to share it. Keep it right here. News coming up next, followed by Tom Hartman on the Civic Media Radio Network. We'll see you tomorrow.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.